Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're going to revisit a conversation that we had with Pam Fox Rowland. Pam coaches executives and top leaders in Silicon Valley and globally. She also facilitates technology and healthcare organizations to succeed in strategic transformation, executive development, and culture change. She's written a couple books, Growing Groups into Teams and 42 Rules for Your New Leadership Role. She has some great thoughts, and we're going to be focusing on growing groups into teams today and looking forward to today's conversation with Pam. First off, can you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your career journey?
Sure. I sort of grew up in corporate strategy consulting. So 21 at Bain & Company, my mom was, you're a consultant? You're 21, okay. You don't know anything. But Bain has a way of pulling people along, and it was such a great environment to learn. And at the time, this was so early in Bain, you could not go straight through. You had to go get an MBA or a PhD. And I was thinking about which to get. And the PhD students I talked with in organizational behavior, which is a huge interest of mine, all seemed clinically depressed. And the MBA seemed really, really happy. And so I got an MBA at Stanford and did what I thought I wasn't going to do. I went back to consulting. And what happened was I met the people at Accenture's healthcare strategy practice. And they are still some of my favorite people on the planet. They refer a lot. We're friends. It just turned out to be that right team of people. And it's one of the things that inspired me lifelong to get excited about the teams that I'm working with and the teams that I build, because it just made such a huge difference in my career. And then I was mid-30s, just about to be associate partner there, and met the guy I wanted to marry and did what many people have said not to do, but I haven't regretted at all, which is to figure out how to get off the road. So 24 years ago, I started doing executive coaching and strategy facilitation and have worked with a lot of healthcare and tech companies on their leadership challenges, strategic challenges, and how to accomplish change in a way that makes the organization stronger and builds trust rather than breaks it.
Yeah, great. Well, I like to ask this question to most every guest that we have on. If you were able to spin back time and talk to a 22-year-old Pam, what advice would you give her?
Yeah, I would say, at least from my experience, work for some great companies. Some companies that do things really, really well, that where people are excited about what they're accomplishing, always learning, and if possible, look for some great people to work for. So one of the people that I worked with right out of undergrad was John Donahoe, who was right out of MBA. And of course, he went on to be CEO of PayPal and CEO of Nike. And even as a first level manager, he used to say when something would go wrong, he would say, let's get the learning out of this and move on. And I learned so much working for him and many other leaders at Bain and Accenture, and I'm grateful for that experience.
Well, you have a new book that has come out just last month. And so you said it still has the new smell.
So, yes, it still has. Oh, I love. Okay. Yay. Growing groups into teams.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that, and it's a great topic, and a lot of our listeners are new leaders or moving into that first maybe CEO position, and it's a great topic to be talking about. And the whole thing around building exceptional teams and how to get results from that team, and maybe first off, if you can define kind of the difference between groups and teams, that would probably be helpful.
Absolutely. Because often with my colleagues at Altus Growth Partners, we consult with a range of companies and organizations, and they'll say, oh, come meet my team, and the team. And when we hear about the breakdowns they're having, one of the first things that we discover is they often have a group, not a team. And we define a team as people who have a common promise. There is something that they want to make happen, Mark. And it's the same something. Like everyone around the room is like, yeah, we're going to make this happen for our customers, our investors, our employees, the next downstream department, whatever it is. We're a team to accomplish this promise. And we say that actually, when the promise is fulfilled or abandoned, you no longer have a team. Then you have a group of people. And you need another promise to then have a team. But that's one of the two things you absolutely need, is that shared promise. And the second thing is a commitment to coordinate well to achieve that promise. And if you don't have a commitment to coordinate well, then it's either not a team or not one that you'd want to be on.
Yeah, that's good. So as you worked with different groups and teams over the years, talk about the importance of, as a new leader comes in, of and I think it says in your book, trust makes or breaks the team. Yeah. Talk about that as far as a leader. How do you develop that trust as far as with a new group that you're leading?
Yeah. So trust is, as I'm sure you've experienced over the years, Mark, is very difficult to build and very easy to break. And so it's one of the things that we have new leaders think about really consciously. And I'm sure you do as well, as you're talking with people who want to step into roles. Is how will I show that I am trustworthy? And we have in that chapter in the book on trust, we have a number of dimensions. So people think often about competence, but do they think about reliability? Like, does my say and do match? Do they think about listening and respect? If you are competent and reliable, but you don't listen to me, we don't have a trusting relationship. I'm a fan or a follower, something like that. And many people have those relationships with the leaders in their company because the leaders aren't listening to them. And one of the things that we know from years of research in organizational development is that when there's low trust, there's slow change. And nobody wants slow change, especially in these times. So thinking about how you build your reputation as trustworthy, I think it's critical.
So as a leader has come in, maybe they've been great as a functional contributor as far as the team, they do really well in their role, but now they're tapped on the shoulder and they're asked to come in and to lead a group or team, hopefully a team. But talk a little bit about developing your own capabilities to lead teams. And what are some things that you see maybe new leaders making mistakes in, and what are some things that they can build on?
Yeah, I love the chapter that our colleague Andrea Bordinka did for the book, which is, the problem is the CEO and I'm the CEO. And she was talking about stepping into being CEO of her family business. And she fell into a really common trap, which is you think you need to know everything and you think you need to make all the decisions. And that can happen to people at any level in the organization. That they, in fact, I used to for many years do interactive leadership learning at Stanford Business School. And when we do simulations, when we hand people the slip of paper that says manager, all the other instructions are the same as every other person in the exercise. We reliably see that person think they need to make decisions when they don't have the information and to choose not to ask people. And that's exactly the opposite of the behavior that we see as effective, which is that when you're in that leadership role, you become like the curious person in chief. Like, how's that working? What's the possibility here? What are we doing about that? Help me understand. And you don't become the chief of answers, as Nilofer Merchant calls it. Because your brain is going to get very, very tired and you're going to make everybody else in the organization stupid. And the ones who are very capable of rising are going to leave if you are the chief of answers.
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. you talk about that an organization is a network of commitments. Mm. And I thought that was an interesting, you have a little diagram of that. Talk a little bit, unpack kind of what that is about and as a leader.
Sure, Mark. So if we go back to every team is there to fulfill a promise, then you can look at the promises across the organization and see, does that add up to the overall promise of the organization? We're going to accomplish this for customers. We're going to accomplish this for our community, depending on the kind of organization. And often you can look and see that there are some missing spots. I do a lot of work with companies out here in Silicon Valley that use a methodology called OKRs, which is a goal setting, tracking, and ideally aligning methodology. And this approach works very well with OKRs because you want all of those commitments, all of those objectives for the various teams to actually add up to what the organization intends to accomplish. But note, we're talking at the level of objectives and results, not at the level of tasks, because you want your team committed to the outcome. We're going to produce this rather than committed to we're going to do this task, because at the rate at which technology changes, the rate at which the world changes, by the time you do that task, it may no longer accomplish the outcome. And so your team needs to be able to navigate along the way.
So in one of the chapters that I think you wrote is Forging a Team at the Top.
Yeah.
And I love the whole thing around that, the idea that the executive team kind of sets the pace for the rest of the organization. And a lot of times that if you don't have that healthy executive team, it's going to filter on down to every part of it. Talk a little bit about that, just some things that you've learned around that.
Sure. And it's often the executive team that least meets the standards of team in an organization. And in some cases, that's because they've never seen it done. They don't think it's possible. Or because, it is the most cross-functional team in the organization. And many executive leaders, and you've probably seen this in your search practice, that if they have a lot of experience leading cross-functional initiatives, they do better on the executive team than people who have been the rock star in marketing or engineering, but don't have a lot of experience understanding different people's perspectives, realizing that when somebody comes up with an idea that sounds stupid to them, chances are they're not a stupid person and they're seeing things that you don't see. And so there's a lot of conversational practices that are needed. You run into CEOs who say, I'm fine leading just what we call hub and spoke, right? Like, I'll get information from you and I'll tell you what to do. I'll get information from you and tell you what to do. And I've seen them transform over time to leading as an executive team. And they were like, man, I didn't know what we were missing. I was trying to save my people time. But it wound up that I was the only person who had the full picture. And it was impossible to drive collaboration in the organization when all of that was just sitting in my head.
So as you're thinking about specific, where maybe a leader has come in and is kind of that answer person for the organization and not helping others get to those answers on their own or helping them as far as in the process, is there anything, what are some of the things you talked about listening, making sure that you're listening to the key stakeholders and asking questions? Anything else that you think would help a new leader coming into an organization to get everybody kind of aligned regarding kind of the purpose?
Yeah, I would say the big one to start with is the shared promise. What is the shared promise of the organization? And the executive team should be holding that together with you. And then your job is to keep curating that promise to make sure it's aligned with what the board needs from you and that you're also bringing your board along. And that as things change, it's always dynamic. I mean, that's why business is fun. There's always new stuff that's going on. There's always new challenges, new technologies, new competitors. And so you're aligned in a moment if things are going well. And then 2 days later, you're not aligned. And so the CEO needs to be having eyes for that. The chief of staff role could be absolutely critical in helping that person see where there's alignment and see how things need to move. And in building trustworthiness in the organization, how are we communicating with the full organization and all our stakeholders in a way that inspires trust? And that doesn't mean you have to share everything all the time, but it means that what you say is accurate and honest. And it means that you are including people in understanding the story of the company. And some CEOs are natural storytellers, some aren't, but they can partner well with the rest of their executive team to make sure that everybody is inspired by the story of the organization.
One of the challenges that a lot of new leaders, especially new CEOs, experience is how to work with a board.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that I think in the book it mentioned that a lot of times the boards are tend to be groups versus teams. How can a new leader come in and kind of influence that? Or is it possible for them to make it more of a team versus a group with that relationship?
Because not everything needs to be a team. And there are some factors in boards, and it depends on the type of the board and the stage of the organization, where there isn't necessarily alignment. And that actually can be part of a healthy board process.
Sure.
It's not part of a healthy executive team process. And when I say alignment, I don't mean everybody going in lockstep and stopping thinking. I mean a dynamic alignment where the executive team is saying, okay, what's coming next? What can we do together? Where they're sharing their differences of perspective, all of that. With a board, what you want to make sure is that there is clarity in the voice to the executive. And that there may be board members who are not inherently aligned, but they need to be communicating and they need to understand at a board level, strategic level, what the organization is doing and to be able to express their concerns, recommendations, et cetera. But yeah, for a new CEO, that alignment with the board is just absolutely critical. And some do very well there and some probably underspend the time needed. And of course, everybody got a big view of that with what happened with OpenAI and how far apart the CEO and the board had become.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I know that you have the new book that's out. Encourage people to pick that up, and it's a great read. I've had a chance to look through it. I told you before we got started, I'm going to spend some more time going through it more in depth. But any other books that you would recommend to leaders that you have found helpful yourself?
Well, since you gave me the little bit of advance warning on that, thank you. And yeah. I hopped through my bookshelf back here to get some favorites. One is The Leadership Dojo by Richard Strozzi Heckler. And it opens up a world that most leaders don't think about, which is how they physically show up as a human being in their organization. And it talks about things like facing. Like, we have to face hard things when we lead organizations. And have you built a practice of actually being able to sit with things that are hard, look right at the person, and face it? And I see so many leaders squirm. I once saw a president literally put a chair between the president's seat and the rest of the organization and kind of stand behind it. this is a great one. As you can see, there's a lot of things I like in this one. The Power of Owning Up by Bob Dunham and Samir Dua, who are also in our book, but they go really deep on responsibility and accountability. And I tell clients, read chapter 4 and then let's talk. And they're like, oh my God, that totally changed my view of things. Huh. And the other one is an old classic that's actually an architecture book. I don't know if you've ever seen this one, Mark, The Timeless Way of Building.
No, I don't think so.
It's extraordinary. And what Bob, who wrote this book, said that just blew my mind is like substitute the word building for leadership and read through this book. And that has totally held for me. It's about creating environments where people can flourish.
Okay. Very good. Well, you did something that's almost impossible. This is like 215 episodes, and I think you mentioned at least two that I don't think has ever been mentioned. So congratulations. That's great. Any favorite quotes that you refer to?
There's one, and this one might have been referenced before because it's a pretty famous one by the science fiction writer William Gibson. The future is here. It's just unevenly distributed.
I don't think I've heard that one.
No, what I love about it is sending leaders to go find the future that is already living in their organization. Rather than looking for, well, what's wrong? What needs fixing? Like, where is the future happening in our organization? Pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Lately, I've been taking a lot of walks with friends and clients and colleagues, and it's just so much fun. Just go to Stanford, walk around campus, go to any of the wonderful parks that we have around here in the Bay Area. So that's fun. And I love to cook and do some working out. So yeah.
Favorite cuisine to cook?
It's not exactly a cuisine, but I love making soups and stews. And especially this time of year, like the crock pot is just out on the counter. And I've usually got a couple things brewing at any time.
All right. Any parting advice you would give a new leader?
I would say that we know from research that brains like progress. Read some of Teresa Mabilie's work. And so really neat to see a team that keeps track of their progress. I mean, as well as the things that aren't working and breakdowns, but they take the time to recognize and celebrate progress. It just creates a feeling of energy in the team and really helps move things forward, as opposed to a team that's like, yeah, we haven't done the whole thing yet, so we're not going to pause and, you know, notice it. And so I'd encourage people to notice the progress.
Great. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Pam, and I definitely appreciate your insights and all that that you're doing with your book, and encourage everybody to go out and pick up a copy. And definitely, do you have another book in mind?
I have several in mind. I do have a first book, which is about starting new leadership roles. And so people are welcome to check that out. And our team has a podcast called Missing Conversations.
Okay. And how would somebody learn more about you and your work?
So go to altusgrowth.com. And if you go to the About page, you can find me there. It's got a link to my LinkedIn. I'm glad to connect to any listeners of yours on LinkedIn. Just please make sure to say that you listen to Mark's podcast, because then I'll know that you're somebody I'm glad to connect with.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, wish you continued success with the book as well as in your practice, and appreciate your time and look forward to staying in touch.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.